just another day of Shop Talk Show.
Nice, nice, nice. Hello, 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 and welcome to... Is this episode 16 of the Shop Talk Show? I'm your host. It is, right? I'm your Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hi, the hostess, peeps. Thanks for listening.
The hostess with the mostest. And today, Chris, do you want to introduce our special guest for us?
Sure. We have Ian Stewart with us, who is an automatician. Is that what you would say? Is that the correct word?
That's the term we use, yep.
Nice. So thanks for joining us, Ian. We're going to dig into just your life for 1 second. Do you have a quick few words about what you do and stuff?
Sure. If we start from birth, that would be probably...
Yeah, could you go from your birth, actually? Like how your parents met?
Sure. No, okay, so I work at Automatic on WordPress.com, which is probably our biggest project. And I work on the theme team there. So I am fully immersed in themes for WordPress.com users, getting them more awesome themes and making sure their awesome themes work the way they should.
Okay. So yeah, so we talk about WordPress a good bit here on Shop Talk, and it's good to, instead of have us, you know, we'll have the official word, as it were. Come join us. So when we look through the questions to pick for this show, the majority are WordPress. So if you care about WordPress, this is the show for you. So
hey, real quick, would you say that this is going to be a WordPress deep dive?
Oh my gosh!
That's my Ooga horn. I've got a new sound effect for you guys. That one, you guys might appreciate it. I had to go through a lot of really crappy websites to find that sound effect, and there you go.
I appreciated it.
Good. It's a WordPress deep dive.
So previous to Automatic, though, before you were an automatician, you still worked with WordPress, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and isn't you're like the man behind ThemeShaper, right? If anybody remembers those days,
it's actually still, those days still continue. ThemeShaper sort of still lives as our team blog, but yeah, I'm kind of obsessed with WordPress themes. So, before I was for a while, I made a little bit of money, you know.
Premium support for ThemeShaper or something like that?
Something a little bit like that. We were selling child themes for the thematic theme. But even before that, I was just doing, you know, WordPress blogging for free because I love WordPress. I love WordPress themes. I love the idea that anyone can download this design, usually for free, and just make themselves look beautiful on the web and make their ideas look presentable, right? So it's an exciting thing.
Nice. Yeah, that's the WordPress does have kind of a psychological power over people sometimes, right? You feel like under the spell of the awesomeness of it.
I'm definitely under the spell of awesomeness.
I am too, and I feel defensive of it sometimes, like almost irrationally. There was a post on WP Candy yesterday about how, so Dustin Curtis is this, dude, and did you read this post?
Yeah, about Subtle.
Yeah, which is super cool, right? And he's like, I'm going to make my own blogging engine, and it's just, it's simpler, and it's just easier, and feels better. And then some people are like, yeah, WordPress is bloated, bleh. And you know, here, this is how I think, this is how blogging should be. And you're like, yeah, I can get behind that. I like good UI. I like rethinking of that type of thing. But it doesn't, like, this being good and WordPress being bad isn't the conversation, you know? I feel like you're missing the point a little bit. Like, okay, what about, you know, you got this new blogging engine that you built that's so simple. You know, it's a hundredth of the size of WordPress, and then you're using it and you're building a site, and you're like, you know what, I could use custom fields, man. That would really help. You know, and then immediately you start going down the road of adding features. And WordPress has been down that road for so long.
Yeah.
And has managed to kind of add features, but do it in a thoughtful way. I don't know. To compare these two, like this project that's just started to this long time healthy project, it just seems like a weird. How do you feel?
I think I'm sort of of the opinion that more is good, right? So, you know, if someone makes a new blogging engine, that's great. And I actually kind of like the comparison because you can see, you know, there's always room to grow, and there's room for, it's good for Subtle and it's good for WordPress to make those comparisons, because both are, you know, hopefully going to grow and keep doing well, and it'll be good for everybody.
Yes, proliferate the market or whatever. Good. Okay, that was already a tangent. I feel like we've gone too far without hearing Uncle Dave's intro.
Oh yeah. Well, this one actually was a question I wanted to kick it off. It was started given to us by Dominique Giglio. He was asking, we have all these web publication magazines, you know, both online and in print, but he was asking, what is it called when a reporter asks a question, a reporter from one of these magazines? Any idea?
So what happens when a reporter asks a question?
What happens when a reporter...
Or what is it called?
What is it called when a reporter asks a question? A media query! Oh, whoops, but up to a media query, guys.
I don't know how to respond.
Usually they don't.
It's fine. It's a media query. I liked it. I put it on the show today. Thanks. Thank you, Dominic. That's some really quality punmanship. I really appreciate that. Next!
Yeah, we have a few news and links. Before we jump into the meat of Shop Talk Show, which is question and answer from listeners like you, we like to share a few interesting things that happened in the web this week and a little hot drama if we can find it. One of the things that just caught my eye in the last couple days was Chrome. You guys like Chrome? What's your default browser, Ian, that you just working on?
This used to be a cool answer years ago, but it's not anymore. Firefox.
Okay.
It's my default browser for everything.
That's okay.
I'm old school Firefox.
No, it's not even old school. Firefox is iterating very fast. I switched between Firefox and Chrome pretty much. I don't know why I asked. I just wanted to say, here's the thing that Paul Irish has been saying lately and that makes sense, and I feel like everybody should be on this bandwagon because it's kind of a nice place to be. If you want to run Chrome, a nice way to do it is just to download the stable version of Chrome, which is right now version 18 or whatever. Just go download that, use stable or whatever. It will iterate and update in the background for you. But if you want to test out cool new features, like us front-end developers probably like to do, you can download a version that's two ahead of it, which is called Chrome Canary, which is now in version 20. And you can run those two things side by side simultaneously with no problems at all. That's hard to do in Firefox. You can go find old versions of Firefox and run them, but only one version of Firefox can run at a time, and we can talk about ways to deal with that or whatever, but I'm just saying it's kind of cool like that. So Chrome 20, that's in Canary. It's two ahead. There's some cool features in Chrome 20 that have just released recently, right? So one of those is input types, you know, input type email, and you get it can validate for email and all that cool HTML5 stuff. Now in Chrome 20, you can go input type of color, and it gives you a native
color picker,
platform specific color picker. Really cool. You can do input type of date now too, and it'll give you the drop down for like you can pick a month and a day through little built in UI, which is really nice. So Opera 11 has that too, so hopefully that will make its way into Safari and stuff too. Hopefully Firefox will get on board, because these are really useful things. You know, it's nice to not have to load up a bunch of JavaScript just to do a color picker. Yeah, so Chrome 20 has some cool stuff. It also has scoped styles in it, which is pretty cool. It's a way to do CSS and just put the scoped attribute on the style block, and it will only, that CSS will only affect elements that are siblings of it and descendants therein, which is pretty cool. That's a flag that you have to enable. But I just thought I'd mention some cool stuff happening in Chrome because they're iterating quick and doing cool stuff.
Yeah, all I got. That's cool. Firefox. Did you guys, have you guys played with the 3D DOM inspector?
I've kind of avoided it because it's.
I love it. It is just. It's like it's a video game. You crack open the like you go Command Alt I or whatever. You pop open their new web inspector, and then there's a little button that you click, and you go to 3D mode, and it like. Every DOM node, like how many nestings and stuff like that, is displayed to you. Oh my gosh, it's just exhilarating. I feel like on Twitter was just like, when would you ever use this? This is total just dumb. But like, it gives you an idea of like, are you efficiently coding if you have like, you know, one thing is like a tower, like. Like that's a true, Google yeah. a Google Plus button is like 60 stories tall on this thing. I mean,
because they use that Google enclosure stuff, which is like div A is within div B, which is in with div C.
There's like four tables stacked on top of each other. It's like intense. I mean, maybe it's not tables, but like, yeah, it's hotness.
It's cooler than it is interesting though, or is useful, isn't it? Or does it help you debug?
Well. I feel like you can get an idea. Like, let's say your client comes to you and is like, hey, what's wrong with my website? Or like, can you make this better? Like, crack that open. And then you can kind of just see like the technical debt they're in based on how many DOM nodes they have. And it's a cool visualization of all that.
That's an interesting use for it.
Yeah. No, I feel like I don't want to. Like whatever, shame people, but let's say these WordPress themes, you know, you can kind of judge how sweet a theme would be by how lean it is. In my preference, I'm a bit more minimalist probably there, but you could totally just see how like chunky these things are if you just crack this open. So there you go.
Fancy. I don't know. Do you want to do this hot drama? We kind of tapped on it last week, but I was like, there was so many blog posts about semicolons in JavaScript in the last few weeks that I feel like it would be hard not to mention it. Did you see all that, Dave?
I did. So, I'm not even sure how it started. It apparently, so you can leave semicolons off and minifiers tend to strip them out occasionally in JavaScript and somebody was saying like that's bad. Like
it's either bad or good.
It kills one of the kills. Well, no. Well, which one it is. So there, Brendan Eich, the creator of JavaScript, even like created the what it's something like interpretive semicolon automator or something like that, and it auto injects these semicolons at whatever runtime or however JavaScript executes.
So thus, if you understand that, it's okay to leave them off, right? Because the main guy, I can leave them off because I know how it works, kind of thing. And people are like, yeah, but it inserts them, so that's the right thing to do, so you should insert them. It's just, it was interesting because of how philosophical it got.
Yeah.
Rather than there was no clear answer, so it was funny to hear people take sides. People I would say don't flipping worry out about it, average Shop Talk Show listener.
Like
let's get done with that. Let's move on to Q&A, the fun part of Shop Talk Show.
Okay, here we go. The first question is an audio question, our favorite kind of question here at Shop Talk, and it's from Jared Stevens. So here we go.
Hey, Chris and Dave. My name is Jared Stevens, and I'm a web designer down here in Texas. And I was just wondering if you guys ever used the WordPress multi-user that was released with WordPress 3.0 and what you guys think of it as a viable tool in web development. Thanks.
Cool. I feel like I've met Jared here. He's in Texas as well. But anyway, WordPress multi-site.
I think he means multi-site, right? Isn't that the proper terminology?
It used to be known as multi-user, but now it's multi-site.
Okay, so so we're both right in a weird way. The confusion is understandable. Do you want to just tell us what it is and means?
Yeah, sure. So WordPress multi-user is a way of having one WordPress installation manage lots of different separate blogs. That's its sort of simplest thing. So you have multiple sites, hence multi-site.
Feels like they're different installations. They might as well be, right? Because they have their own posts, they have their own comments, they have their own themes, they have their own which plugins are activated and which aren't.
Exactly. Yeah. So like the biggest example of that is WordPress.com. So that's one WordPress installation with
Millions, right?
I'm going to get the number wrong. It's like 32 million different blogs.
32 million blogs on one installation of it. Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
So it scales.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But it's actually a lot of people, I don't do this myself, but it's really popular to use for local development. So when you're designing, themes for a site locally, you don't want to have to keep making different WordPress installs. Just WordPress multi-site locally.
Why don't I do that?
Why haven't I thought of this?
Make the
books. I'm an idiot. Oh, my gosh. That's the best idea.
Okay, well, we can just stop the show right now.
Done.
That's some good tips. I have a local WordPress. I usually have at least three or four going on. Sometimes I'm like, if it's really easy, I'll just toss another theme into an existing WordPress install and then just activate the new theme and be like, whatever, I'll just use this one or whatever. It's nice to – that's a really good idea. But there's some obvious live – I just finished up a – so I had SurveyMonkey. We have blog.surveymonkey.com and then jp.blog.surveymonkey.com. They are – we're not trying to share any content between them, but we are trying to share the design between them. They're literally different localized versions of it. So one of them's in Japanese and one of them's in English. And we're like, we're going to start a Portuguese blog too. And right now, the Japanese one and the English one were separate installs of WordPress. And I was like, God, these things are nearly identical, guys. And then on the roadmap too was more blogs that we're going to start. I'm like, we need to spend the time right now to squish them into multi-site, which is not it's kind of non-trivial. I think the path to moving two independent installs of WordPress into multi-site is harder than just starting a new multi-site.
But we did it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a perfect use case for it.
And we did it, and it's live, and it's nice, and now we can start this Portuguese blog with a click. You know, just be like, doop, we got a new one. And I set it up in such a way that the themes are, like, the resources for the themes are, like, even outside of the themes folder, so that, like, they all share a same CSS file. Because, that's not going to change, you know. We're going to actually get more to this. I think the next question, at some point, we'll revisit the idea of shared resources. So maybe let's just move on. Unless you have you ever used it at all, Dave?
I haven't, but I just... It's mostly A, opportunity, and B, I don't like immediately think of it, but it's bundled in. If you're working a job let's say you're a record label and you have a bunch of bands that all are like, oh, I want a blog for my band. That just seems like, don't keep all that. Don't make them go make their own sites and all that. It just seems... Yeah.
If I could go back in time, every WordPress blog I did would be on one, probably. You know, like if you're like a client, I'm hosting your site, they want you to host their site, I would just put them all on one, even if they're unrelated, just so that it makes your life easier. A new version is out. Oh, click update. Oh, every single one of my clients is updated. Awesome. What do we got next? Say that.
I think it's Tumas Martikainen. Let's call Thomas Tumas, he's asking, one thing I don't like about WordPress is that when I give the site to a customer, they might get confused about the back end. But this doesn't look anything like my site. It's, you know, that classic line. In my opinion, WordPress should have the option to write and edit posts from the front end. WordPress 3.3 came out with the WP Editor API. That's a function that lets you insert the WordPress editor on the front end or anywhere you want, which should do the job. I know it's possible to write posts from the front end, but this is where things get too complicated for me. I don't know how to do it. Any tips or thoughts about all this?
So, yeah, there's a bunch of things that it can get pretty code heavy, but WP Editor definitely can be used on the front end. There's actually kind of a short tutorial on, I think it's soderlind.no, on how to do that, if you wanted to check that out. But the P2 theme is actually kind of a cool theme to check out. If you go to p2theme.com, that's just P and 2, theme.com, it's not using WP Editor, but it's a theme that lets users just post from the front end and see their post immediately appear live. And it's kind of a cool sort of model for that sort of user that gets freaked out by the user, by the back end of WordPress. So I would definitely take a look at what P2 is doing there.
Yeah, right on. So just for people that have just no idea what we're talking about, it's just to make a new post in WordPress, you got to log in, usually at something like /wp-admin or whatever, and go and select new post and hit the post and hit publish. Some people are like that land that you're doing that in, which, like, I guess generically, how do you guys refer to it? I just call it the admin, I guess. It seems like it's always the admin. Sure, it looks different than their site looks, right? It looks like WordPress. It doesn't look like the theme that you have activated. And Tumas is saying that's weird for some people. I don't want to have to explain it to them and have them be freaked out because what they're looking at in their web browser isn't what their site looks like. To one, I would say to that, that's just some education that you might have to do. I would say don't just be like, oh, they said they're afraid of it. They're my clients. I quit. I need to spend 5 weeks coding some front end thing instead of just using WordPress. I would say first try to just explain to them what's going on. I mean, there's no, you know, that you might be overreacting if you're like, oh, they absolutely won't be able to learn this software. You know, WordPress isn't that hard to learn. I'd give some faith to your clients that they can learn this. If it's really true, if it's really like they just think they're not getting it, I have to move the editor to the front. Look into WP Editor. I guess I didn't quite realize that. I'm sure it's not as simple as just dropping the editor on the front. You have to write a bunch of code
a little bit. But there's also other things you can do in the back end too, so that the back end looks a little bit more like the front end. If you add editor-style.css to your theme, you can start to style the post editor so it looks more like what you're seeing on the front end.
Sure, so if you're using some fancy font as the main font of your site, you can just have that font look like in the editor of the back end.
Yeah, so that could be really good for clients that want to have just a little more help there understanding what they're doing when they're writing their posts.
Cool.
What was that again? I feel like it's important enough to say. It's editor style?
Yeah, editor-style.css.
And you do nothing else, right? You just drop it in there and the editor starts using it?
Yeah, and WordPress looks for it. So if you want to see an example, the two most recent default themes, 2010 and 2011, both are using it, so you can use that as a base, so you know what you have to reset from TinyMCE and so on. It can get a little complicated for CSS, but it's just CSS. It's not that hard.
Right. Cool.
Okay.
Very cool.
Hopefully that answered your question there, Mr. Martigan. Let's do another one.
All right, next question. This is from Juan Ortiz Zaforas. He's asking, is there a real difference between WordPress and Drupal? Which is better and why? I'm learning WordPress. Should I learn Drupal or another CMS? Oh man, this is like this is like War of the Worlds here.
Well, people just have that question, right? They're like, I don't know, should I learn several CMSs? Should I learn one? Which one is better than the other? Classic question.
This is a 3-hour show, right?
Yeah, I want a line by line diff statement. No,
the line is they are both CMSs. You
know? They are both CMSs. Maybe like we should start like top level, like what's different, and then maybe one or two nuances. Does that sound good?
That sounds good.
Maybe Ian, you're best qualified to slander your competitor.
You know what? I'm really bad for slandering Drupal because I like Drupal. I think that they're good people that work on the project, and they do lots of neat stuff. So I won't slander Drupal, but as someone that's used both, I find WordPress easier to learn for new people, both as users and as people that are going to develop on. And easier to theme. So I think that's a big plus for me for WordPress.
Yeah, I can't, you know, is it true? In WordPress, it seems like you can do 95% or more of everything you'll need to do in a theme lives in that one folder. It lives in the theme, the active theme folder. And what, you know, there's plugins are separate from that, but pretty much everything else from functionality to design, to JavaScript, and all that stuff happens in that one folder. And I love how like succinct that is. I'm not sure if it works that cleanly in Drupal. I don't know. So I think usually my default answer is kind of like, if you're already really good at one or the other of them, that mm-hmm. it's usually not worth learning the other one. Just because it's like they're so similar. I'm like, if you're already getting it done, Is it worth the learning curve to get another one? I mean, like, no. Just do your job, man.
If you're just starting out, I would recommend WordPress, though. I mean, that's not just because I'm biased, but it is growing really fast.
Mm-hmm.
For me, if you come from a developer mindset, like you've built your own e-commerce system sort of thing, like Drupal is probably where you want to be. Because it has been up until this point very developer centric. I think they're starting to move, and like they've made responsive a standard across the board. They're really kind of moving forward. But WordPress has always been very design, like make a theme, you know, and it's been very user centric in that sense, with especially with the WordPress admin getting better every time. So that to me is the important thing. When I hand off a site, I want it to be very very easy for the client to use. Somebody in the chat room, Topcat, is saying if you want a flat site, like it's just very, everything's kind of the same, like it's mostly just posts, like WordPress is probably the way to go. But if you have different content types that have tons of different presentations, Drupal will probably fit. But
so I would argue against that.
Because we have custom post types in
that's right,
WordPress
yeah.
now.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true.
Do have to define with code. I don't know how it is in Drupal, but if you want to I have a screenshot section on CSS Tricks. I made a custom post type for screenshots. That's a little bit different than a post is like. It has different information that it collects. It has a different like vernacular in the back end. It's, instead of going new post, I literally say new screenshot. But I had to, you know, define all of that within my functions.php file to get it done. I don't know, in Drupal, you know, like, I don't know. Is that going to change for WordPress? Is there going to be easier ways to define new content types, or is that the type of thing?
I think from the core, it'll probably remain, I mean, this is just my guess, it'll probably remain at the code level. In Drupal, my Drupal knowledge is a little bit out of date. I think Drupal 6.something was the last version I used. But it was a core like UI feature. A user could just go in if they had the rights and just make new content types, and then they have a plugin that allows you to get really involved. However, for WordPress, there are plugins if you need to have a UI for making new custom post types, you can just download a plugin that's available to you.
That's nice, because then if you go the plugin route, it like will stay with you despite what theme you have active, right? Whereas if you did it all in your functions.php file, the second you activate a different theme, that whole world is gone. Like my screenshots will be gone.
Yeah, I actually recommend if you are going to enable custom post types, to just make your own plugin that does it, like that just registers them. Not that develops the UI, so that doesn't happen.
Don't be afraid of that either, people. I used to kind of be weirded out by that, but it's so kind of trivially different than adding code to a functions.php file. You just throw a little, there's just some stuff you put at the top of the PHP file that indicates that it's a plugin, and then you just put the PHP code below it, right? I mean, it's at the simplest level, you know, more complicated plugins get way more complicated than that, but just moving a few simple commands over to a plugin instead of your functions.php file, not that big of a deal.
Yeah, if you're already messing around in your functions file for your theme, you're essentially messing around with plugins.
Yeah. Ooh. What do we got next, man? Kit McAllister has a question about syncing databases.
Here we go.
Hi, Shop Talk. My name's Kit. I'm a developer in Portland, Oregon. And my question is, how do you sync your local and remote databases?
Wow.
That's a tough one.
Isn't it? It's like the ultimate question. I work on CSS Tricks locally. I have a local install of it, but the database is out of date for what I have online. So I can't just work locally with the post I wrote just yesterday. It's just not there. It would be nice if it was there, because it just would feel better. It's more relevant to my updated content. But in order to do that, I have to SSH in and run the MySQL commands and stuff to export the database, download that file, you know, probably nuke the one that I have currently and rerun MySQL to make it local, and then change a bunch of stuff because the URL is slightly different locally, and WordPress is a little weird about that. So it's kind of a pain. I would say if Kit, it didn't say WordPress, but if you are specifically talking about WordPress, there is a cool tool that I can't vouch for because I haven't used, but I almost guarantee it's awesome. It's by Alex King and the people at Crowd Favorite. You know them, right? They have a thing called Ramp. So it's at crowdfavorite.com/WordPress/Ramp, which is specifically for dealing with this problem in WordPress. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I would probably say the exact same thing. Like, I used to do it manually as well. I don't run into it a lot, but I've heard some people say some good things about Ramp, and Crowd Favorite know what they're doing. But it's also, like you were saying, it's nice to have the content locally, but it's kind of a pain to have it locally, you know, so I would maybe adjust, you know, expectations there. Do you really need that content locally?
Yeah, do you really need it, or do you have enough to make it pretty obvious what you're doing, right? Like if WordPress, you got a couple pages, you got a couple posts, you need exactly, you know, there's some cases where maybe you do, but for the most part, it's not that required. And in different programming environments, if we're not talking about WordPress at all, I'm working on a Rails project right now, for example. There's rate, rake, db, seed, or whatever, which you can make a little file that will like seed a decent amount of content. So even if database stuff changes, you can like just nuke it and make a new one with seeded content and be all right. It doesn't deal with syncing for you, but I don't know. There should be version control for databases. Somebody needs to get on that.
Yeah, but it's less version control because you have like these, like you said, the URL thing is get like the actual content's a little different. It's tough stuff. I don't know. Sometimes I wish WordPress like had I don't know, like SQLite or something like that I could work off locally, and then I don't know, but that's not even a possibility. Is that right, Ian? Because it's like MySQL all the way.
I believe that this is approaching the limits of my WordPress knowledge, but I believe you can use different databases other than MySQL.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I know there's like Postgres plugins and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It's not so much version control as it is syncing. Like, wouldn't it be kind of cool if you could like, there's some weird technology. Oh, this is where we... I'm going to start getting emails making fun of me because of my limitations of knowledge too. But if there is some cloud-based DB that you could point both your live and your local copies to.
I mean, I think you can do an Amazon something or other. I forget what it's called, Amazon Power Ranger is what it's called officially. So you just hit the Amazon Power Ranger server and it'll... Both databases can use that, but then again, more dollars than what comes with your web host, you know. But anyhow,
yeah,
I think
okay.
Some magic.
There's
magic is the ingredient.
Fairy dust, for sure. Are we running out of questions? Is that the last? No, I have a whole nother. I was worried there for a minute.
We got another half. We're at halftime, man.
Okay, so I should say we just have the one sponsor this week, pretty much. Isn't this a quality radio program? I feel like you should tell your friends that make money making web products that they should grow their business by advertising on Shop Talk by going to shoptalkshow.com/advertising, because we're a little light on the sponsors and we could use one. So bring it on. Anyway, I'm gonna do one more spot for less money. .lesseverything.com is the URL. It's a conference by Stephen Bristol and Alan Branch, some funny dudes down in Florida et al. And they're going to do a conference about making more money with your business and being more efficient with it in Tampa, Florida. Runs back-to-back, the front-end web design conference. So you can go to both if you're that type of person. But Less Money is a intimate kind of 50-person thing where they're going to talk about how they made money and hopefully, you know, because it's so small, talk with you directly about how you can make more money. So that's the deal with that. Check it out, folks.
Awesome. Let's continue on with our question-rama. The next one is another audio question. I love it. From John Stevie. Here we go.
Hey, Chris and Dave. This is John Stevie. Just throwing out a quick WordPress question for you. I was building a kind of boilerplate for WordPress recently and ran into a couple issues and was wondering if you guys have solved these before. My question was... I'm trying to use the boilerplate so that I can create child themes of it, so I can simply make development a little bit quicker. And one of the issues that I ran into was certain functions that I want to essentially override. There is no way to kind of override functions in PHP without a little bit of hacking. And so I was kind of curious as to how you best did that. It looked like you could do a little bit with WordPress actions, but some of these, some of the things are you're inserting code into the footer and such, and so there's not really a way to override that action. So I was kind of curious what your guys' thoughts were on that.
This has got to be tailor-made for Ian, right, as a seller of child theme.
I love this question. I love people that do, build their own boilerplate themes for their own development use, because I'm always recommending that, either for something that you can start off with just for hacking, or if you're going to use it for making child themes, because both are kind of smart. So for overriding a function with PHP, one thing you can do is, and you can see this in again in 2010 and 2011, is if your parent theme it has a function, you can check, wrap it in a conditional. That is, if using function exists. So if function exists, this function, or sorry, if not function exists, this function, then run all this code. So what that means is, because your child theme is loaded first by WordPress, you can copy that function there and just recreate it. So that gives you sort of a hack to override a function in PHP.
I see. So So, but at the, does it, if you're running a child theme, and apparently, and they both have functions.php files, will both of those functions.php files run, or will only one of them run?
Both will run.
Okay, and then if you want to change what the parent theme did with that function, that's what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can overwrite it that way. Also, if, talking about WordPress actions, if you have something the parent theme is adding to an action, either to like WP head or WP footer, your child theme can remove those actions. And WordPress is a whole API around that for adding actions, removing actions, adding filters, removing filters.
Right,
so you can hook into it that way. So,
so if your parent theme is doing something that you want to not do in your theme, instead of like overwriting the function and then just doing like return nothing or something, there's a cleaner way to do that, which is just have that remove that action instead.
Yeah. Plus, if you just want to change something in the footer, you can just totally ignore all of that advice and just copy footer.php from the parent theme into your child theme, and WordPress is sort of looking into your child theme folder for template files. And if you have your own footer.php, it'll just load that one first.
Yeah, there you go. So you can override things in a modular part level.
And if you make your parent theme more modular, you have more parts to easily override. So if your parent theme has, you know, one big, huge template file with lots of code in it, that might not be something that you want to override. But if you break it up into little bits and pieces and use git template part, which is a WordPress function, to load all those different pieces, each one of those pieces can be overrided in your child theme.
Nice. So it's not even hacky, really, John. This has all been thought about and is kind of ready to rock.
Yeah, so I think 2011, the current WordPress default theme, has a lot of that going on in it, and I think it's a good model for anyone looking to make their own boilerplate or starter theme or what have you. So I would definitely check that out.
All right. So we have a departure from WordPress just for a minute, where TJ Fogarty is asking about, and I put this in here because it's interesting to talk about, I don't know, how teams work and, you know, how we develop on teams and projects and stay on track and stuff like that. He says, in terms of project management, do you think Gantt charts are a useful tool or just plain evil and frustrating? Are there any flexible alternatives? And I would say, I was like, I'm going to say if they're evil or not, but first I have to Google it and find out what a Gantt chart is. So it looks like, if you have no idea what a Gantt chart is, people, it looks like if you open the web inspector and we'll go to the network tab and reload the page, and it will show you all the order in which things load. That's kind of like a Gantt chart, only instead of them being individual resources, they're like people. And they're like, I'm going to work on this, and it's going to take me this chunk of time, which can overlap a little bit with what Dave is going to do, and he's working on this with a slightly different... Did I have that right? Does anybody... Do you guys... Have you guys ever used one?
I have not used one for like project planning per se, because most of my stuff takes like days. You know, it's not like I'm 2 hours here, 2 hours there.
Yeah,
for the most part. I guess I do this, so I could.
Do you think that they're evil?
I don't think they're evil. It would probably be pretty mind numbing to like every week spend about 20 minutes like breaking up my morning and afternoon and.
Yeah, I could see if somebody's breathing down your neck about this at a thing, and really, honestly, you had to break off a part of your Gantt chart just for dealing with Gantt chart.
Yeah.
I was worrying about like how do you, I know, you know, Automattic is a totally distributed company. We've all heard that before. That's really cool. How do you guys, I assume you don't use Gantt charts to plan out what you're going to work on next, or maybe you do, but I kind of doubt it. And how do you work at Automattic for keeping everybody on task? Do you scrum or
So what we do, I'm pretty thankful we don't use Gantt charts. I know enough about them that they frighten me. But we sort of, at Automattic, we're at, I think it's 105, 106 employees. And we pretty much break into small teams. So there's not, you know, we're not all working on one giant project and we have to manage all these resources. And the fact that we're broken into small, like 5 to 10 person teams, makes it easy to not have to worry about really intense project management, I think. I mean, myself, I looked into Gantt charts years ago, and because I was involved in a big project and I thought I needed it, but I kind of just think having super clear priorities and a clear plan sort of trumps that for what I do.
Cool. And what? How big is your small team? Do you have a 10-person team?
We have a 5-person team.
Okay. So part of that, you know, I've worked on plenty of small teams in my life. One of the ways, like for example, at Wufoo, we were, you know, as far as developers and stuff, we're like 6-ish. And we had this thing where this meeting's on Friday, and we said what we were going to do, or said what we did last week, we said what we were going to do next week, and then talked about any blockers we might have next week for productivity. And that's kind of, it's similar, right? In the everybody's in the room, so everybody's like, does that sound like enough work? Did you actually get done what you said we were going to do last week? Does it feel light? Does it feel heavy? Do I sense any blockers that you might have? So it's a way to have some accountability on a small team that feels right to everybody. Whereas if you just are like hanging out in a chat room being like, oh, I did some stuff or whatever, there might be some like animosity that builds up. You're like, is Bob doing any work?
Yeah.
Does he feel like he's contributing the same amount? How do you guys deal with that problem?
So one of the things we do at Automattic is part of our creed is that communication is oxygen. And we sort of solve that by over-communicating. So you can tell everyone we all love what we do, right? So we love sharing what we're working on. So that's not hard to keep track of who's doing what. So over-communicating, we do the same thing where every week on my team, we write a post about what we've been working on, what we're going to be working on, our top priorities. We're always chatting. We do a weekly voice chat. We're in IRC all day long. We have Skype available. So you can, if someone sort of goes dark, you know, you can tell, oh, maybe they're running into some trouble. Maybe we should, you know, hash things out there. But it's really hard. I find it hard at Automattic to not get stuff done. It's everything feels very fluid and easy to get going. There's always lots to do though. That's the
right.
The thing that's not easy.
So it's unanimous, folk. Gantt charts are evil. Next.
Let's move on. Okay, if you think Gantt charts are good, make us a Gantt chart about why Gantt charts are good. There you go. Mark Ridgway wrote in asking, I'm an aspiring web designer developer. Is it possible to break out in the industry these days without going to college? Will web design shops hire people solely based on their portfolio and interview alone without a college degree? I've taken a few college courses in programming, and I know and love many languages. I'm not a super creative person, but am very good with technical stuff of coding and running a website, etc. Is it possible?
Mark has gone to college a little bit, but doesn't have his degree in it. Can he make it? Would Automattic hire Mark if he was a super good PHP hacker?
Absolutely. I've never been to college, and everything I know is self-taught. So I would say yes.
Look at that. That's an answer.
There you go.
There you go. There you
go. Drop out right now, Mark.
So I'm just assuming as long as you're, you know, a grown up, or, you know, I'm not going to do the age thing. We kind of talked about this a little bit last week, but, you know, it's more than, you know, you can be a great hacker, but kind of be a abrasive kind of guy. And that's also a factor, you know. You probably won't get an Automattic that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's more to just being, you know, if college smart. Teaches you.
I personally think anywhere, or myself, I would rather work for anyone that looked at what you could do rather than what degree you had or where you went to school. I think that's sort of a better way to operate, especially when it's web stuff, because I think anyone can get by with, you know, a good good portfolio and a good work ethic. That takes you way farther than where you went to college or what degrees you have.
Agreed.
Yeah, I don't know that college right now can teach you so much about our industry, but you go to college for other things. In my book, but yeah, there you go. That's where I stand on it. Also, watch out where you apply. I mean, some businesses, like, you know, older enterprise-y places might be like, you need a college degree in, you know, programming rocket ships and stuff like that. But you probably just don't want those jobs if that's what they require. That's my opinion. Sticking to it.
Ryan Tavenge, Tavani, Ryan Tavani. Sorry, Ryan. What do you guys use for a spell checker on your sites? Right now I've been using InSpider Insight, which is a PC link spell checker. I've done some searching, but there isn't too much out there. Are there WordPress plugins? There are WordPress plugins, but they only search your posts pages, not the design or the code. So what's the deal there? Isn't there, I think WordPress like owns a fancy one.
So Automattic, we own a fancy one. It's called After the Deadline, and it's one of those plugins that checks, your posts and pages, but as Ryan says, not the design.
Well, you wouldn't have to worry about it on WordPress.com anyway, right? Because you're not going to misspell something in a theme.
Wait, I might.
It got me thinking about while I was reading this question. I was like, you know what was cool in Coda? And Coda by default, which is a Mac-based like FTP integrated, Subversion integrated code editor thing, they did this thing where, like, you know, if you're writing just code, it doesn't spell check it. But if you open a paragraph tag and write stuff, it would spell check that, what's in the paragraph tag. And apparently, and I was like, why don't all things do this? And it turns out I think they all kind of do. And then I tried TextMate and I was like, oh, it does that. And then I was in Sublime and it wasn't doing it. And I was like, oh, dang. But then I just went to settings and turned spell check to true. And now it does work. So apparently all editors have some kind of, or at least the Mac ones that I use have that ability. So okay. If you're in WordPress and you're writing posts, use After the Deadline, which is more than a spell checker, but it has a spell checker too, I'm sure. And if you're writing code, just make sure that your spell check feature is on. And I just turned mine on, and I feel like going back and looking at a bunch of code that I've written in the last few months, because I feel like, I don't know, when I was using Coda more, it protected me from that, from those embarrassing moments, and I haven't been protected now in months. Mm. What do you think? Do you like spell check code that you commit, Dave?
Well, no, I don't. But we usually have a heavy duty pre-launch review, you know, just all hands on deck, everyone clicking through the site to make sure no one spelled something wrong. There's nothing more embarrassing than somebody saying you used your instead of your, and oh my God, they're the worst. And they think you're totally stupid, too. Spelling mistakes are rough. Well, people who care about spelling mistakes are rough.
It's the most awful emails from it. And then you both want to, like, kind of punch their nose and shake their hand because they just helped you, you know? They helped you, and it's useful, and now you can correct that mistake, and your site is better for it. But it's always, like, it comes with, like, links to places that teach you how to do it and, like, insult your lineage.
Yeah and it's like, geez, forgive me, man. No. There was a website, I mean I don't want to call anyone out, I guess I am, but there was a website where it was all about spelling errors and what, like, popular websites or something, and like so it's just like a database, find a spelling error, put it here, and then they like comment spam you or something like that, like, lol, found an error, check out this report. And you're just like, Like, that's not the way to do it. You gotta, like, get on Twitter and just say, hey, buddy, yeah. Noticed you had a spelling error. Here it
just
is.
Just trying to help out. I've done it too, because you have, because you don't come out of the womb knowing how to spell or knowing correct contractions. Let's end this thing on an awful rant.
Yeah, now you're pressuring. Chris is going to rage quit the whole episode. Hey, Ian, thanks for coming on. Let's just recap. How can people like find you on the internet, give you money, use your products, etc.?
Sure. You can find me at iandanielstewart.com. I'm on the Twitters at iandstewart. And if you're into WordPress, if you've listened this far, you must be. And WordPress themes, themeshaper.com. That's our automatic WordPress.com theme team blog.
Cool, cool. Right. That's awesome. And hey, thanks everyone for listening in the chat room and live here, and then also at home, whether you're mowing your lawn or whatever. But we really appreciate you guys. Make sure you're following us at Shop Talk Show on Twitter, and then rate us up in iTunes. Give us a 500 stars. Bring up that average.
ShopTalkShow.com.